I'd like to call the meeting of the Joint Higher Ed Committee on Regent Selection to order. Thank you all for being here. The purpose of the meeting tonight is to recommend a candidate to the Joint Convention of the Legislature to complete the six-year term of board on the Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota, of which Steve Swiggum was elected to last year to represent the 2nd District. I guess we do have an agenda, but we can dispense with the roll call if there is a quorum present. Is there a quorum present? And I am indicating that there is a quorum present. Without objection, we can pass that. Everybody has a copy of the rules my understanding is there's a copy of the rules in everybody's packet, if they've had the opportunity to take a look at those. And then we would move to adopt those rules. And we can give you a few minutes to look at them if you haven't had the opportunity. And when we are ready, I would entertain a motion to approve those. Representative Poppy, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question about rule number 4, that the nominated candidates must reside in the 2nd Congressional District.
Yes, and Representative Poppy, my understanding is that because there have been some, memos that have gone out in different directions, but the final kind of decision that was made was that it was in the best interest to appoint them from the 2nd District because Representative Swiggum, or former Representative Swiggum, was from the 2nd District, and that's what it was appointed for last year.
I move to accept the rules, Madam Chair.
Representative Depke has moved to accept the rules. Any questions, any discussion? Senator Latz.
That rule requiring residents in the 2nd District, is that simply our decision to make, or is there some other source for that?
Well, and Senator Latz, I was explaining a little bit about the memos that had come from Senate and House counsel regarding the issues of whether or not they would have to be in the 2nd District, but it's their recommendation is to have someone who resides in the 2nd District.
Ultimately, that's our decision to make.
Well, I guess it would be, and that is why it is in the rules in the end. But the Senate and House counsel agree that given that it was former Representative Swiggum who was elected to represent the 2nd District, that it should be someone from the 2nd District because the statute does require someone from each congressional district. Representative Depke renews her motion to adopt the rules. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The rules are adopted. We will then move to the nomination of candidates. And just to remind you of the rules, the candidates must be nominated by 3 members of the House and 2 members of the Senate. And out of respect for the work that the RCAC did, we would like to, we would entertain a nomination for the 3 candidates who were chosen from the interviews from last year for the 2nd District. And those would be Mr. Tom Devine, Mr. Kelly Smith, and Mr. Robert Vogel. So the chair would entertain a motion to nominate all 3 of those.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I move that motion.
Senator Roebling has moved the nomination of the 3 names I have stated. And we do need 2 more from the Senate, 1 more from the Senate and 2 more, or 3 from the House.
I'll second.
Senator Pappas seconds. From the Senate. Representative Benson.
Rukavina.
Moves, and then Senator Representative Rukavina seconds. Do I have 1 more second? Mazerol. Thank you very much. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, no. The 3 names are placed in nomination. Are there any other nominations? Seeing none, we will proceed to the interviews. And what we do have provided for in the rules is each nominee will be given an opportunity to give a 5-minute presentation. We will go through all three of the presentations and then bring all three back up for any questions. So if we could hold our questions until that question period, that would be wonderful. I guess we will start. We will go alphabetically. Mr. Tom Devine, please join us at the table for your 5-minute presentation. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Devine, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, and members of the House and Senate Higher Education Committees. Let me begin by thanking each of you here this evening for committing yourselves to this 150-year-old process of selecting a new regent to fill the now vacant seat. Also, I want to express my gratitude to each of you for taking the time both last year and this year to meet with me to share your thoughts and your visions about the University of Minnesota. I am here this evening prepared to take on the duties of being a regent of the University of Minnesota if I'm elected. As a fourth generation business owner here in Minnesota, who along with my wife have raised 3 children and the past 24 years lived in Chanhassen, we've actively participated in all aspects of community life, social life, educational, and political life within the 2nd Congressional District. In order to run for the remaining 5 years of this 6-year term, a person has to come from the 2nd Congressional District, and this is where I live right now. The research has now been completed. It reveals the longstanding precedent of an elected regent always filling out the balance of a seat term of office after redistricting. So to this end, whoever's elected now will represent the 2nd all the way through the balance of this seat term according to all the past regent protocols. Also of note, upon taking the regent oath, one pledges to be a representative, always acting in the best interest of the board as a whole and in the best interest of the entire state, not just the interest of one geographical area. I will always take in the best interest of the people wherever they live into an account in any decision that I would make as a regent. 17 months ago, I began my quest to familiarize myself with the duties necessary to be elected. During this time, I have listened carefully and met or spoken with every one of you that is sitting here this evening, and met with over 110 other legislators in a bipartisan matter outlined to me in the region selection process last year. I'm now prepared to carry your messaging down to the other end of University Avenue and to contribute to the policy and governance issues which are being set forth by the new university's president and to address the structural, the leaner, and more significant educational outcomes he has outlined for all of the university systems. I have also shared with each of you this is an opportunity for both the university and the legislature to work together to do the people's business. In my sitting through the many House and Senate higher education meetings these past 2 sessions, I have listened carefully, and it has energized me, and I am prepared to begin working immediately to evaluate whatever is necessary to help implement the new agenda that has come forth. There are many things that are now unfolding that would enhance public-private research opportunities and the adoption of all the best possible corporate practices in all walks of the university. As a graduate of the University of Minnesota, I cherish my experiences. Both of my parents graduated from private colleges here in Minnesota, and all 5 of my brothers and sisters attended the University of Minnesota. I also now have a freshman son attending the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. Educational and student experience outcomes have always and will always have always been and always will be a priority to me. In my 30-plus years of being a volunteer within higher education, I have visited over 130 college and university campuses all over the United States. I have gained much unusual perspective in terms of doing that. It has provided me a unique opportunity of student life, exposure to parents' concerns, administrator challenges, and yes, to legislators' directives. There isn't a genuine concern about tuition increases, debt loads, focus on 4-year graduation, quality, safe, affordable student housing, advising, mentoring, financial aid, and admission standards. I've listened carefully to all the discussion that has gone on these past 2 years as it relates to each of those topics. I value the mission of a land-grant research institution and the role that it plays here in Minnesota as a very rich resource. The need to tell the research story must be expanded so that more see the opportunities to help grow new industries, create new jobs, whether they're in medical, mining, forestry, agriculture, education, or any of the new forms of technology that are now coming about within the university structure. There is currently some separations in the thinking between the two complex demanding bodies, the University of Minnesota and the legislature, but there is nothing in these arrangements that prohibits a wonderful cooperation, increased dialogue, and a deep understanding of each other's needs. In closing, I have told each of you I will be committed if elected to building and supporting a very open communication process. President Kaler has stated, and I quote, "I want to move forward from a default mode of no, can't do it, never done it, won't do it, to a culture of yes, let's give it a try, let's take a calculated risk, let's take a calculated fact-based risk," end of quote. This is a big commitment from the President, and the Board of Regents I know is committed to following through on that. My commitment is my three T's: transparency, truthfulness, and trusting relationships of mutual respect. This will be my focus. And the people of Minnesota expect no less. I thank you, the voters who elect the Regents, for the opportunity to be here this evening. I value the task that you have been entrusted with to represent the people of Minnesota who have elected you and to carefully choose the most qualified person for our state to fill this open seat. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your efforts.
Thank you very much. We'll call you back for the questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, for the 5-minute presentation. Mr. Smith, welcome to the committee, and whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Joint Committee. I want to thank you for this tremendous opportunity to speak with you tonight about one of my passions in life, the University of Minnesota. My name is Kelly Smith, and I'm honored to have been selected for this interview as a prospective University of Minnesota Regent. I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself. I've been married to my wife, Chris, a registered nurse, for 26 years. We're blessed to have 3 children. Abby, who is a second-year doctor of podiatry student at Des Moines University. Emily, a recent graduate of the University of Chicago and currently working in public policy in Chicago. And Joseph, currently a junior at the University of Minnesota Duluth, majoring in business economics. I'm currently in my 20th year as a superintendent in Minnesota, having served in the communities of Stewart, the combined school district communities of Elbow Lake, Wendell, Barrett, Huffman, and Kensington, called the West Central Area Schools, Red Wing, and currently Belle Plaine Schools for the past 8 years. Prior to my first superintendent position, I served the Gibbon Fairfax Winthrop Schools as a math and computer teacher, coach, activities director, business manager, and finally assistant superintendent. During our family stay in Winthrop, Minnesota, we were also small business owners owning a local cafe for 5 years during our time there. My involvement with the University of Minnesota began at an early age, as our family was very involved in 4-H and the University of Minnesota Extension Service during my school years growing up on a farm near Cottonwood in Lyon County. And later in life, as my own children participated in 4-H in Grant County in western Minnesota. I graduated from the University of Minnesota Morris and attained my doctorate from the Twin Cities campus. My oldest brother is an alumnus of the Farmhouse Fraternity on the St. Paul campus, graduating with an agribusiness degree. And my other brother and his wife is a university med school graduate. My other brother is a university vet school graduate. I'm currently a member of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association and have been for a number of years. My experience as a school administrator has given me a strong background in governance, working with school boards ranging from 6 to 25 members. I've been directly involved in contract negotiations with union and non-union bargaining groups, and have worked extensively in policy development, financial planning, and academic improvement. Throughout my career, I've been involved in a number of educational organizations, the Minnesota Rural Education Association, Schools for Equity in Education, and the Minnesota Association of School Administrators as board member, legislative committee member, and executive committee member. Currently, I am the president of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, which serves over 450 school leaders across the state of Minnesota. I've also been involved in numerous civic organizations through my years. Currently, I'm serving my second consecutive term as president of the Belle Plaine Rotary Club, and I've been involved in service club membership for the past 20 years. As a school superintendent and business manager, I have nearly 25 years of experience and responsibility for entire school district budgets. Three of the school districts that I arrived at were in statutory operating debt when I arrived, and I was part of the process and effort that successfully restored fiscal stability to those districts. I feel I've proven to be a collaborative leader who has been interested first and foremost in the academic growth of all students while recognizing the limiting constraints of present-day financial conditions. I have helped communities through the difficult process of school district consolidations, building projects, operating levies, and a difficult 17-day teacher strike. I feel that my strengths continue to be my ability to help build consensus toward a solution, my ability to evaluate problems from a variety of perspectives. I truly understand the distinct roles that board members and management have within an organization. I have had a long-term respect, admiration, and passion for the University of Minnesota. I believe that the success of our state is in part tied to the success of this great institution. I believe that I can bring a strong education background with me as a regent and would work diligently to continue efforts to strengthen the preschool through undergraduate degree programs throughout Minnesota. I would also work to help the university achieve a goal of being a top three public research institution while continuing to work on maintaining the affordability of the post-secondary education experience during these difficult financial times. In closing, I have found that throughout my life, I have been most successful at tasks for which I have a deep passion. I have absolutely no doubt that my passion for the University of Minnesota and my real-life experiences will allow me to ably serve this great institution as a member of the Board of Regents. The Rotary International motto is service above self. Serving as a University of Minnesota regent will be one part of my giving back to this institution that has provided so much to me and to my family. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak with you this evening, and I look forward to the question and answer session later. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Mr. Robert Vogel. Thank you very much for being here, Mr. Vogel, and please, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Chairman, and committee members, for the privilege of being here. I respect what you do. I served a couple of terms as county commissioner, so I understand the commitment that it takes and the time and the effort, and truly appreciate all of the service that you give to our community and our state. I thought I'd just share a little bit about who I am, how I was brought up, and basically how I got here and what I think I can do for the university in the future. I grew up in New Market, Minnesota, which is about halfway between Minneapolis and Faribault. And back then it was a farming community. So I grew up in a town of 210 people, very simple life at that point. Went to grade school there in New Market, New Prague High School, graduated from the College of St. Thomas. Had the good fortune to marry my wife 37 years ago. We've had two children, two grandchildren, of which I've got one sitting there critiquing me tonight. So you've got a proud grandpa as well as a candidate here. After graduating from school, I worked for a few years in Coon Rapids and Mendota Heights. And then in 1975, came to Newmarket and joined my dad in the bank. It's a small community bank. And in the early 80s, he decided that he'd hand over management to me. So I had the opportunity at a very young age to start learning how to run a business. The customer base back then continued to be dominated by the local farm community. But by the late 80s, the area started to change and become more of a transition area, where farming was still fairly prevalent, but hobby farms and people moving out from the cities became a little more dominant in the population. With that change, the community and the bank became a combination of local families who had lived there and worked there for decades, and people moving in from outside. So the bank expanded with a branch in Lakeville and continues to be a community-based business, but with a somewhat different constituency than what I grew up with. About that time in the late 70s, I also became more involved in local government. We actually started the volunteer fire department in Newmarket. We didn't have one back then. And also started engaging in some city activities, and with our branch at Lakeville, started to get a little involved in Lakeville things as well. And as it turns out, it was kind of the start of what I'm calling a dual-track career. Included a full-time job, of course, but also moving through various civic and government involvements, which led to becoming a Scott County Commissioner in 2003. While serving in this office, I continued to work at the bank, of course, which did not leave a lot of free time, but gave me a tremendous learning opportunity as well as a way to continue my public service. I promised myself when I entered the commissioner job would be a temporary public service stop rather than a long-time position in elected office. So in 2008, after serving two terms, I chose not to run for re-election. I thoroughly enjoyed the experience, but continued to believe it was a good decision to limit the terms. I've continued to serve on the Economic Development Planning Committee of the county, which has kept me somewhat involved. So I didn't have to withdraw completely, but haven't had the responsibility there that I did, of course. So when the opportunity to serve as the University of Minnesota Regent reappeared, I gave it careful consideration and talked with my family, friends, and the board of the bank, and came to the conclusion that if I was fortunate enough to be chosen, I'd gladly make the commitment of time and effort to do whatever I could to further the U's goals and mission. I believe there are two important attributes I can bring as a regent. First, commitment, and second, experience. Commitment. I don't take lightly the responsibility of this position and feel, from my past experience, I can assure you that I'm willing to do whatever it takes to be a good regent. I've learned over the years that a new endeavor will need a huge amount of time and commitment, especially at the beginning, but also as time goes on. I've always been able to set priorities in my life to accomplish the new things I've committed to, and I assure you that I will treat this one with the same respect as I have those. Second is experience. As a result of managing a community-based business now for 35 years, I've had a wide variety of duties and responsibilities. I had to adapt to many changing circumstances, including taking the management duties of the bank in my early 30s, just as the local farming economy was starting to go through its severe difficulties. So I learned firsthand how to work with people and work through issues. Most importantly, through all these experiences, I've learned the value of vision, strategy, execution, and accountability. Because even though things might not be going as we wish right now, it's imperative when you're a leader of an organization to not only face the current challenges, but also help your organization prepare for what comes next. In addition to the private sector, I've also had the experience of being a public elected official, which not only used the benefits of the experience from the small business perspective, but also brought into play the public nature of the business being conducted. Having chaired the Scott County Board of Commissioners twice gave me a chance to not only be part of formulating what the message is, but also communicating that message to the public at large. Going forward, I believe the university is going to be facing many significant challenges, some apparent and some not yet known. I feel my experience in the areas of vision, strategic thinking, governance, objective reasoning, and representation of all stakeholders in a public forum can be helpful to the U. I also commit that I will put in the time necessary to learn the complexities, culture, and operations necessary to make informed decisions, as well as that in a respectful and dignified manner, I will honestly and openly discuss issues for the betterment of the institution and those it serves. My desire for the future is to help the University of Minnesota thrive in a new and oftentimes uncertain future by keeping things like vision, efficiency, serving diverse needs of all stakeholders, and most importantly, reputation and commitment to purpose as the basic tenets of its success.
Excuse me, Mr. Vogel. I have to cut you off. I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And actually, if you'd like to sit there and have the other two nominees join you. If you'd like to sit in alphabetical order, it might help with the questions. Then I. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that this question is for all three. I know that I posed this to at least one candidate who made some rounds beforehand, but the Goldwater Institute released a report back in July of 2010, and it was titled Administrative Bloated American Universities, the Real Reason for High Cost in Higher Education. And that report went on to highlight that, specifically at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus, that during a period from 1993 to 2007, administrative costs actually doubled and almost equaled to the amount of the increase of tuition. So as a member of the Higher Education Committee, I'm particularly focused this on, you know, what do we need to do to bend down the cost of higher education for our students, and looking particularly at, during that period of time, with an exponential increase in technology, why was it when actually the use attendance dropped by 1.5%? Why did we see that double, and the impact that that had on tuition? So my question, and then I'll highlight, you know, the recent revelations of the Brunick position that he's now has since retiring from the presidency, I think only accentuates my concern, at least, that we take a look at these things. But I would want to know, and I know the board or the trustees don't micromanage, the regents don't micromanage, but from a policy high level, how do we begin addressing those issues?
And we would ask Mr. Smith to go first. We're going to go, since we started with Devine, so we'll make our way that way. So it'll be Smith, Vogel, Devine, and then we'll. So Mr. Smith.
Representative and members of the committee, I guess I haven't read that report, but I certainly understand the basis behind the report that administrative costs have continued to rise. I can't speak for what has happened in the past, but I do think that schools across the country are facing this issue right now and trying to make the conversion to more digital learning and other things of that nature to try to eliminate, make their administrative offices more efficient and services more available for students in a variety of ways. I think President Kaler has already talked about a number of initiatives to try to streamline things at the University of Minnesota, including his year-round three-semester schedule that would make a administration as well as the overall campus more efficient. So I think certainly that's going to be in everybody's focus as the regents continue to work to improve the university, and we'll be looking for leadership from President Kaler and other administrators to provide us with possible solutions to that problem.
Mr. Vogel.
Well, I think it's important when you're operating as a board to stay at a higher level. So therefore, I never wanted to get involved in the administrative detail. I think it's really important that we look at the mission and the goals and where we're going with this thing and state that purposely in today's environment. It's changed drastically, especially in the last 5 years. So as a board member, I'd want to collect the information relative to the mission, the goals, and so forth, and see, indeed, if the organizational structure fits. Now, that may take some help from outside sources, learning what that's all about. But I think it's so important that we don't lose the vision and the purpose and say we're going to cut 10% across the board or 20% across the board. I think it's so important that we look at the individual responsibilities of the organization and then start attacking what it is that we can do in an organized method.
Mr. Devine.
Madam Chairman, I am familiar with the Goldwater report. It's a 39-page report, and there must be about half that number of pages of just graphs and information. It's a significant report. I think that I'm sure the university is in part familiar with that report and some of the findings that they've had, that and probably other reports that are very similar. I think that the role of the regents really in that situation is to take those kinds of documents and that kind of information and sort through that and charge the president and the staff as these sorts of documents come forth and really take a serious look at what others are saying about the institution, sort through fact and fallacy or whatever it may be inside the report if that's the case, and then come forth with really what are the best practices that other schools are now accomplishing. One of the things in terms of not micromanaging, but really in terms of setting policy for, you know, or by the board, we should really be working with President Kaler closely to take things and information like this and do something with it. And I think there's certainly a number of demonstrations here in the last 60 or 90 days of information that people are looking to have sorted through at a much more sophisticated level than what we've got right now. And I think that's therein, it really lies the charge for the president to take that on. I know there's been some discussion within the institution of setting up some task force to specifically look at some of these things down deep in. And I would certainly, as a regent, encourage that kind of participation, and I would encourage the participation of others in terms of the participation of board members within the regions to work on these working groups or these study groups, faculty, staff, administration, to take on these issues, and even maybe some legislators in terms of what is it that we're trying to really look at and what do we want to take apart. And in my opening remarks, I really made the issue about communication, and this is an excellent example as information comes forth. And certainly, I've seen a lot of information come forth before your groups here these last 18 months, and I think that opens the opportunity for us to work collectively together and take this information, actually do something with it, and report back to the various people, and then recommend the policies or formulate the policies that we can work with the president to implement the changes that need to be done. I might also note that in the last 15 years, you know, the cost of tuition has gone up about 250%. So it's not only just the administrative cost, but when we look at how the pass-through affects. And right now, as most of you are aware, we have the largest amount of debt. There's about $28,000 or almost $29,000 of debt per student coming out of the University of Minnesota, the highest that we've ever had, adjusted for inflation and whatnot. And we need to look at that as Minnesotans and understand what we can do about that to a much more sophisticated degree than what we are now.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask the nominees if they could talk about their involvement or connection with the University of Minnesota. They're kind of past, present, whatever.
And Mr. Vogel would begin this question.
Senator and committee members, I have not been a student of the U. My wife graduated from the U. So I haven't had a deep involvement in the U. My passion here is for education. Higher education. I've been highly involved in economic development, especially as with the county and different cities and so forth. And with the economy doing what it's doing and seeing the need for training people for the jobs we're going to need and the responsibilities they're going to have, I really believe that the U, being the center of education in Minnesota, needs to have strong leadership at the board to be able to adapt to that. So although I don't have specific experience with the U as far as being a student, I feel that relative to the experience I've had in governance and running a small business and the county board and working with budgets and accountabilities and policies and process and so forth, that would be the most helpful to you.
Mr. Devine.
as many of you know, I've been very actively engaged at the University of Minnesota since my graduation. I was an active participant in the Greek system as an undergraduate. I served in a variety of leadership roles there during the time that I was an undergraduate there. I've been a very active member for many years in the legislative affairs and the legislative advocacy. I've spent time here in this building advocating for certain legislative things as it's come through the years here relative to the University of Minnesota. I'm familiar with that process and very comfortable with that process. I've been active in the Alumni Association and all the various activities they've had. I've been a Gopher sports fan from day one. And I've been very interested and very active in the housing initiatives that the university had. I worked with a group of people. We raised about $350,000 of contributions to take on the issues of housing at the University of Minnesota, nonprofit housing to work within the University of Minnesota Foundation. We have a holding company, a 501c3, so it truly was a nonprofit. Went through the process of filing that with IRS. And the housing issues, as we've moved from the commuter model at the University of Minnesota, which I grew up under during the 1970s, and moved to full-time day students, we now have, I think, close to this fall, I think it's about 88 or 89% of the students live on campus. And we really, this fall is the first, or I should say this in December was the passage of the first new housing that the university has really built in many years. And they've defaulted the rest of the housing to the private sector. And that's been somewhat, I guess, by design, by policy that the regents have set. And the problem has been that the private developer market has taken that issue on with great seriousness. But the cost to the students is significantly higher than what it is all over. It is not untypical to see a $900 to $1,000 a month student rate in an apartment there at the University of Minnesota. So I look at these cost drivers in terms of what its effect is on higher education right now all across Minnesota, but at the University of Twin Cities campus, and I'm concerned about that, and I've spent time on it. I might also note that the St. Paul campus, I know, has much more capacity. They have more students there, but they don't have the housing to support that. So that's one issue that I've spent a lot of time, effort, and helped raise the money to look at that issue in great detail to try to look at options that the university might have going forward.
Thank you. And Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Pappas, I think I spoke to my involvement with the U in my opening remarks. I'm a graduate of University of Minnesota Morris. I received my doctorate from the Twin Cities campus. I have numerous relatives who have graduated from different schools within the university. You know, most of my experience certainly has been with the teaching and learning side of the university's mission, and I have not had direct contact with the research and discovery part, which is certainly a major part of the university's mission and a critical part to, I believe, Minnesota's economy. But that's something I certainly would love to be more involved in and work with as a regent member. The third part that I have been involved in is the public outreach. While I lived in western Minnesota, I worked with the Center for Small Towns out of the University of Minnesota, which was an organization, part of the university, that helped small towns deal with the impact of declining population, need for upgraded infrastructure. This was at a time when connectivity was a big issue in rural Minnesota, outstate Minnesota was being left out. The Center for Small Towns had a big impact in that area, working with communities to address some of those needs. I've been an active member of the Alumni Association. I guess any legislative support that I have done has been from afar. When I've been down at the Capitol, I've frankly been here in terms of K-12 education issues rather than University of Minnesota. But I've always followed the University of Minnesota, and it's an institution that's dear to my heart, and I would continue to be even more involved as a university regent.
I believe Representative Plowski had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for all three. I would like all three to respond to the impact of the historic cuts to the University of Minnesota over the last few years, and particularly the last year. And I am not looking for the standard reply, which some of you have already given. Tuition has gone up. There is student debt. What I'm looking for is an understanding at the main campus and the coordinate campuses of the impact of the cut. So can each of you respond in some way, factual way, as to the impact of these cuts to the University of Minnesota, to the programs on its main campus and its coordinate campuses?
Mr. Devine.
Madam Chair, Representative, you and I have had some discussions one-on-one about this very topic, and I watched the budget cuts last year be put into place and then the follow-up of what those impacts have been. There has not been significant, from my standpoint, significant documentation of showing really what the impact of that is in terms of reports or demonstrable, you know, significant documents showing what that is. And I think that's been requested here. I've sat through hearings where there's been much discussion about that. And I, as a regent, would be looking for this kind of data to understand what is the impact of that. I know there's been, I know on the Minsku side, they've done much there. There's been documentation. There's been reports. There's been reports of numbers of individuals that have been downsized or right-sized, whatever you want to say. I've seen that all unfold on that side, but I've not seen it in great detail for the university. Now, that might exist, and I haven't seen it, but in sitting through many of your meetings here, I have not seen a lot of that data, and I think that's important data for the people of Minnesota to really understand what is the impact of that.
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, Representative Pulowski. Yes, I too have not seen any formal list of the cuts, but as a school administrator, I can tell you it's a difficult process to continue to try to aspire to the vision of an organization when there are continuous cuts to a system. I think we all at times can take a reduction of some sort, but when it's a constant erosion of the funding support to an institution, it starts to create some problems. Certainly, I think some individual programs have been reduced at campuses, which eliminates options for students. But beyond that, I couldn't speak to specific examples of things that have been lost. I think our current administration has done a fairly admirable job of trying to keep as many of those options available within the financial constraints that are present with today's fund.
Mr. Vogel.
I've described this a lot of times as, unfortunately, the new world. Things have changed drastically in the last 5 years, and the cuts to everything, and having experienced this firsthand at the county, are difficult to take. I don't have specific information either, unfortunately, but I think going forward it's going to be important to, again, look at the core things that the university has to do. And let's make sure that those are done, because we have to structure an educational program, a research program, and an outreach program into the boundaries of the fiscal constraints that are there. And none of us really know where this is going to go and how bad it's going to get. And to me, that's what leadership is about, is taking that information that you have and making the best decisions that you can at the time, recognizing that the most important thing that you have to do is protect the institution in its core mission. So I apologize for not having any specifics, but just think that the most important thing that we have to do is look at what is that core that we have to perform, and let's do it to the best of our ability.
I have Representative Bettman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question deals with, for all three of you, deals with the issue of the sale of alcohol at the University of Minnesota, specifically the TCF venue. As you know, both the House and the Senate has passed the legislation off the floors, and now it's currently in the conference committee, and it'll come back out of the conference committee, then passes on to the governor. My question to you, the three, what process should the Board of Regents follow to come to a decision and a recommendation on this issue.
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Detmer, as far as the process to make that decision, certainly I think you've already seen much of the information about what is currently in place on other campuses across the Big Ten and across the country. That certainly is going to be part of the discussion that the Board of Regents would have to have. From what I understand of the bill now, it's a proposal to have alcohol available in the suites and then a restricted area. I think that's a reasonable compromise to this issue, as certainly some plans were made by the university looking at the suite revenue from the suites with alcohol sales. Personally, I'm a football season ticket holder. The absence of alcohol has not affected me in any way at the games, and would not make any change in my desire to be a season ticket holder. But I do think it is something that would provide for additional revenue for the university, and in this compromised position, be something that would be acceptable to me as a regent.
Mr. Vogel.
I would look at this as, first of all, going to staff and getting information, because they're as close to this as anybody, and I always want to gather the information first. Then it moves into a policy arena, where then I think you have to balance this again with the general policies and the direction of the university relative to the recommendations that are being made. As far as having it in the first place, I'm fine with that, but at this point I wouldn't feel comfortable speculating on how it would be implemented, because to me something like that flows up to a board for a general policy discussion rather than down from a board where you would be making specific managerial decisions on how to do certain things.
Mr. Devine.
The liquor issue has lingered out there for several years now over at the University of Minnesota. Let me make two or three comments relative to it. You know, under the original bond, the bond modeling for the stadium, it was anticipated that there would be revenues of approximately $3 to $4 million a year that would be coming in, that would help be used to help pay off those bonds, retire the debt on the stadium. And in of that modeling, after the liquor thing did not come together initially, that source of revenue is not there to be able to pay off the bonds. And so to that end, those resources are being used or to pay off the bonds from other funds. I don't know where those funds were made up from, but I know that there's a cost somewhere else because the revenue isn't coming in. I've always looked at the revenue as a source. It's a user fee, user tax, whatever you want to say it. If you don't want to pay it, you don't drink in the stadium. So the money comes in. From my standpoint, it doesn't hurt the modeling of how it actually comes through. And it's not only just the stadium there, but the liquor also affects Mariucci, and it also affects Williams Arena in terms of how the liquor sales there, and I guess in some other small ways on campus. Last year, there was a group of alumni and interested friends of the university that did take on the liquor issue, and I think brought a lot of perspective. They, I know, lobbied here at the legislature to really take the liquor thing apart. And I had a call from my representative, Joe Hoppe, who was chair of the committee that was first looked at the liquor situation. We had a lengthy discussion on it, and I said, you know, I feel bad that the loss of revenue is not occurring, because it should be occurring for the reasons that there. On the other hand, I can step back and say the issue of alcohol with the students is an issue, because certainly you've got about half the population that are students that are not over age 21. And I have a son that's now a freshman at the University of Minnesota, so the issue is obviously important to me in terms of understanding what the impact of that is. I think one of the things that the university and all of higher education, I've seen this all over the country, needs to address is a far more sophisticated modeling of alcohol education. So that it isn't it isn't, we're trying to do alcohol education when the students walk in the building, any one of the three facilities over at the University of Minnesota, but it should be a part of the process of orientation, online education, and I think also the element of having parent education or online education available also enhances that overall educational experience, because the liquor issues that we're trying to control aren't just inside the stadium. It's really an educational issue that we need to be much more sophisticated in what we're doing and how we're approaching it right now. So overall, I support the concept of having alcohol. Obviously, I look at it from the revenue standpoint and looking at alternative revenue sources and not using precious university resources to pay the bonds off under the stadium modeling that was originally put forth.
Representative Dowd asked to do a follow-up, and so I am granting that request, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate this question, and I know I was one of the members, one of the many members that pushed for some resolution on this issue. I couldn't really tell how each of you felt, and I appreciate, Mr. Devine, you saying at the end there that you would support this. But the option now that the legislature has given to the university would be alcohol in the suites, and then one area that would be convenient to the general public, almost like a beer garden type area. Just really quickly, yes or no, would the other members support that option?
And I would like to start on this one. We'll just, if you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but anyone who'd like to.
Sure. Yes, I think I've said in my comments that yes, I would support that in the restricted area in addition to the suite. So I would support that.
As would I, yes.
And I support the issue, and there was one proposal that talked about doing it, phasing it in over several years so that they could kind of work through the logistics of it, and I would be comfortable supporting a phased-in approach to how it would work also. You know. But overall, I'm supportive of it for the reasons I've said.
And Senator Sharon, was yours a follow-up? I do have
just a question.
Okay, I have a couple. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For all of you, on a daily basis, professionally and personally, describe the kinds of technology you use and or the variety of digital devices you use, and you might want to also include just your level of comfort and or proficiency with that, please.
And we're beginning with Mr. Vogel.
Thank you. Technology-wise, I'll be honest with you, I'm not on Facebook. I've not gotten to that point. But I did find that when I did my county commissioner stint, that the technology saved me. Heavy user of email. I get teased about my use of spreadsheets because I get excited about building spreadsheets. So I'm a practical technology user. I'm not a kind of a recreational technology user, I guess you could say.
Mr. Devine.
I obviously, you know, support the whole concept of technology. In my business, we invested about $250,000, must be almost 20 years ago now, in the first phases of what was technology enterprise that came into the insurance industry. So I'm very familiar with it. I have an iPhone. Probably the best little invention that has ever come along. I use it, and it's changed. I think it's totally changed the way that I communicate with people on a regular basis. I do overall believe that it's important for people to communicate face to face. And I know that one of the things that's happened in technology, and a lot of it's happened in my business practice, people get away from meeting people and talking to people, and I think that there is something that's been lost to a certain degree. I look at some of the colleges within the University of Minnesota. Some of the schools have provided iPads to all the incoming freshmen, and I think that as a gift, they've done a co-op arrangement with Microsoft and with the various vendors that have been providing the equipment. And I think it makes sense, and I certainly. I've been familiar with the Minnetonka School District, and they've done huge, huge advances in that. So I'm watching the younger people as they hit college now. Their sophistication levels are there, and the university probably could be doing a lot more in terms of how it interfaces with their students within the campus.
Mr. Smith.
Members of the committee, I started my career as a teacher in math and computer science, and my My use of technology kind of spawned from that original entry into that area with computer science. I think I'm very technologically savvy. I have a Twitter account for about the past 18 months. I follow a lot of you folks and reporters covering the legislature up here. I use FaceTime to communicate with my iPad. As a school superintendent, I've done interviews over Skype. Was involved in interactive television 20 years ago as a teaching mode in public schools as we were sharing classes between rural districts over interactive television. So I feel technology is something I've been very comfortable with. Try to stay as current as possible. My wife keeps telling me about Pinterest, and I haven't made that leap yet, but I know there are many more things out there. Facebook, I do not, as a school superintendent, I don't have a Facebook page, but our district does, and I blog on a weekly basis. I write for our local paper, and that goes out on a blog as well. So I feel I'm very technologically savvy and certainly use it as a piece of my means of communication. And I would agree with Mr. Devine, certainly that's only one form of communication. Email is great, but to kind of go by the rule, if it's more than three sentences, you really should talk to that person in person rather than through an email. And so use it for mass messages, but still prefer the one-on-one and direct communication.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you, all three of you, for your willingness to step forward and be willing to serve as a regent. It's a long job, and here it doesn't pay well. My question is actually motivated by a comment that Dr. Smith made during his presentation about his idea that the University of Minnesota should be a top three public research university. I hope I quoted you correctly on that. And so my question for you is a question of sort of where is that priority? Can you name a priority currently held by the university that you think would be less important than that? And then for the other two, so we can have an answer from all three, where do you place that priority? Given resources as they are, and you've heard from several of our committee members here that resources are limited. We've made cuts, very, very unpleasant cuts. And, you know, how can being a top three public university, research university, is not cheap. How do we do that?
And we'll begin with Mr. Devine, just to keep in the order, if that's all right, Representative Banyan. Mr. Devine.
There's been a lot of discussion, as all of you know that are sitting here, about the movement of placement in terms of achieving certain levels of national recognition and ranking. And I think, as I understand, the board's struggled a little bit in terms of trying to figure out a path and what is the priorities. I would say, sitting here right now, I don't, and again, I don't have access to all the information that everybody else has, but the rest of the board members have, but I know there's been a struggle in terms of trying to understand the rankings and how you move this forward. The medical school, I know, has had issues there, and when you start to get into the research, you know, how do you quantify which area of research and how are you going to do that? I think that there probably needs to be a much broader understanding. And in my opening remarks, I made the point of touching on that because I really think there needs to be much more clarity to the people of Minnesota about what is our commitment, what is the University of Minnesota's commitment to these research opportunities. And it's not clear. I know there's been the campaign, the Discovery campaign that's ongoing right now. But we have at the University of Minnesota level, I don't think that they've defined fully what exactly that all encompasses. Now, they may have, and maybe I've missed part of it, but I think the general public is not clear on what it is that we're trying to accomplish overall in those areas. But it certainly is noble, and I think it's, you know, I think we've got to look at all of the pieces together and say that the general public needs to have a much clearer understanding of what it is and how these resources are going to be applied to those priorities.
Mr. Smith.
I would concur that, you know, it's hard to quantify if that's a number one priority right now, and as I read University of Minnesota material, but I think certainly that aspiration is always going to be part of a vision and a set of goals that the university will have. It's certainly a, I like the words that President Kaler used in his State of the University address, the discussion about balance. We have a lot of competing needs at the University of Minnesota, and it's up to administration to seek that proper balance. And certainly as you try to achieve a standing as a top three, it's going to take financial commitment that may be public, that may be private. And I think it starts with having that vision and keeping that vision out there to allow that to happen at all. Without that vision, we're not going to move up in the rankings. And certainly rankings are simply just that. We have rankings in K-12 education, and we debate the validity of those all the time. But they are a place to start from and to grow from. So I think that's certainly very, very important. You asked about where I would rate that. Again, it's difficult to put that one, two, or three. It's always going to be there. I think another goal of the university and that I personally would have, you know, we have a lot of fine post-secondary institutions in Minnesota and across the country. But I think the University of Minnesota diploma should be something special. When that diploma drops on a prospective employer's desk, they should say, wow, you graduated from the University of Minnesota. I know I'm getting talent here. So there are many priorities that the U has. I see that being constantly right near the top. We need to make that a valid document that states excellence when our graduates come out of the University of Minnesota.
Mr. Vogel.
Well, being a land-grant university, it really comes down to balancing, to me, the three tenets, which is the research, the education, and the public outreach. So you can't do it in a vacuum, and my feeling is what we're going to have to do is look at setting priorities relative to the resources we have. And sometimes, if resources are limited, you're better off being really good at a few things than trying to be okay at a lot of things. So as I would face that balancing question, I don't think it would be appropriate to put one above the other, because those are really the three legs of the stool. It really comes down to figuring out where do you want to put your priorities and how much funding can you provide to achieve them relative to your ability to accomplish them, which I think it is just vitally important, because when I see organizations go off in too many different directions, it just a lot of times ends up putting them in an also-ran position.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. The state of Minnesota contributes somewhere in the range of 17 or maybe 20% of the overall budget that the university operates under, which is not the majority of what the revenue stream is for the university. I wonder, could you speak, because I've wondered about how a board operates in terms of such things as priorities when the revenue stream for tuition or fees, just what we were talking about in terms of liquor sales and a stadium to help cover costs, how those reductions of the state's investment in the university as it relates to other revenue streams impacts the course and the direction the university takes, and what it means then in terms of its commitment to having the focus be on the students having the best education, and when that degree lands on a employer's desk, is does that get lost because decisions have to be made to pursue financing, and then the financing starts to drive what it is, because that's where the money comes from, that's where we go in terms of our mission. Could you talk about that and how you would deal with that as a board member? And just as an example, we're talking, you know, about a unique issue here. We're talking about the liquor sales in the stadium. You know, you might have a principle that you start about whether or not you want liquor sales on the university campus that starts to slip away because of the revenue stream. That's just a small example of what I think is probably enormous pressures on this university to receive money from research for research that starts to drive your mission rather than the board establishing a mission and then pursuing that and making decisions out of mission. Can you talk a little bit about how that impacts you and your role on the board?
We'll begin with Mr. Smith.
Senator Sharon and members of the committee, I think it does start with that overall mission and vision of the university, and that's where I would start. What are the top priorities of the university? And then it does become balance. What resources are needed to make those top priorities flourish and grow? And then what resources do we have available to continue the other things that we would like to? And unfortunately, in times, difficult financial times like this, sometimes there are decisions that have to be made that by keeping a program, you're actually hurting the program and the institution if you don't have adequate funding to support it. So there are difficult decisions, but I think it starts with what is the vision of the university and what are the priorities, and then what are the available streams of revenue to support those visions and how far will that revenue go?
Mr. Vogel.
Well, I face this, again, with the county government because it's much the same. When your revenue streams dry up, what do you do? And it got to be kind of the age-old question, does the money drive the priorities or does the priorities drive the money? And when it comes down to it, it's the budget, because you're making decisions constantly in your budget about what you're going to spend money on, and that's going to determine your priorities. And that's why it's so important to have that budget driven by your mission and your goals, and also accountable to it. Just because you set a budget doesn't mean necessarily it's going to do what you want it to do. The important thing is to go back and look at what did we accomplish with that budget afterwards. Because when you're sitting there doing things at the outset, you don't really know how it's going to work out. But after it's over, you can go back and look and see what did it actually accomplish. And the liquor issue is a good example of that is going to drive a priority to some extent because of the revenue stream. The other thing that sometimes happens is you'll find revenue streams driven by those that are doing the grants. And it's really important if somebody is going to grant or disperse funds to you, that you're sure that those funds that are going to be used the way that they're being told to be used are consistent with your mission and purpose. Because otherwise, all of a sudden, it becomes the tail wagging the dog. And that's where the priorities and have to be so clearly stated, consistent with that vision and that mission.
Mr. Devine.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon, there's a few drivers that are going to change as we move forward. You know, we're not going to be able to continue to do things exactly the same way. We're going to have to do more with less. I think that's going to be the model across America. It certainly has become a model in corporate America, and certainly, I think that if I can use President Kaler's pick up the pace quote that he's used many times. there is going to be, I'm sure, a shift in terms of what's going on. But I'm looking at some initiatives, I think, that are starting to unfold right now over there that is going to address some of the financial issues. There's a lot of talk of centralizing the backroom aspects of the University of Minnesota. In fact, there's even talk about the chancellor from Minsku and President Kaler coming together and putting a working group together to look at what cost synergies can come together for the two educational units in terms of helping to preserve or stretch out the taxpayer dollars. I know that right now President Kaler has talked about they've got over 200 centers, institutes, interdisciplinary areas within the university, and he's looking right now and he's charged the staff, and I know the board has set forth the direction at the retreat last July in terms of how can we take these pieces apart and drive more synergy or more costs out of those, or what should be combined in order to come up with some cost savings. I know there's other things in terms of these revenue enhancements that they've talked about, where these public-private partnerships come about, where what things can be spun to the private sector from the university, which can be done in a more cost-effective way than trying to do it internally within the University of Minnesota. Any one of these things isn't going to solve a significant part of the budget problem as such, or the shortfalls that we're maybe recognizing right now, but the combination of addressing things in a number of different ways should have an effect. And one other thing that President Kaler said in his State of the University address here was he had proposed something kind of somewhat revolutionary in talking about a year-round, three full semester school year. And for those that would want to look at that, get out of school faster, accumulate less debt, have a very concentrated focus. The model of higher education is set up on the agribusiness model of 50-some years ago, and maybe that really needs to be put on end for those people that want to do it a little bit differently. And can the institution be agile enough to adopt to some of these new models that are coming about? These are the things that I look at in terms of my participation as a regent. My age, my energy, and whatnot, I think, would lend itself to trying to look at these kinds of projects and say, okay, what can we do out there to deal with this in a different way? And I think that's the real challenge that we're all going to be facing, I think, in society going forward, is how do we do more with less? And I think that the university is going to have to do that. And the Board of Regents should really be helping to set the tone with the president on what it is that we need to be doing more efficiently and how do we get more deliverables out of that.
Madam Chair. Follow-up, Senator?
Yes, thank you.
I am getting a list.
Thank you.
I
just want to clarify that my question really wasn't about how are you going to reorganize the system in order to create greater efficiencies in the context of reduced resources. That's one of the ways the university can control its mission, is that if it redefines and reorganizes and does reorders its priority for spending within its existing system. But it is the idea of, with the state of Minnesota's participation, the public's participation, the general fund participation, in the university's support, so that who is your master? Whose tail is wagging who here? If you do cuts within your system, you still retain some control. But more and more, the university is needing to seek partnerships or seek grants or seek external resources from its alumni, because the state's participation is shrinking. I think that has an implication. I think it's important to hear from potential board members as to how you retain, or can you retain, a commitment to the public as a public institution when the public's contribution as a state is only 18%. As a state is only 18%.
We'll open it up if anyone cares to respond. We'll leave the option open.
I'm not sure if I'm going to say too much differently, but I think that's happening all over in public institutions, private higher ed institutions. The costs are certainly driving the product that those schools are available to offer. I would go back to, I think you have to circle the wagons around the priority and the vision of the university, and what public aspect is in your priorities yet, and balance that with the available public funds that are going to be coming to the university. Certainly, we know that we're at an all-time low, and we don't see that changing in the near future. So we're going to have to move forward with the understanding that, in all likelihood, we are going to have limited public infusion of dollars into the system. So it starts with those priorities, and you need to remain true to those priorities as you look to other sources of fund. And I deal with that in public schools right now. There are grants available for just about anything. And if you work hard, you can get them. But if you get them and it's not something that matches, you got money, but it doesn't match the vision of your district, you're hurting your organization. And I think we would have to be very careful about those circumstances. And again, it starts with what is the vision and the priority of the university.
Anyone else?
Let me quickly go to what you're talking about. I think that part of the issue really has gotten to be the two ends of the University Avenue that I spoke of. I think that, you know, at this end of University Avenue, there's a lot of things that are being outcome driven right now. What are the outcomes relative to the investment that's being made? And the public is really asking that right now. On the other end of the University Avenue, the questions need to be responded to appropriately and forthcoming with lots of information, lots of data, and that needs to be communicated on a much broader scale. When I talked about the need and the transparency of greater degrees of communication, I think that this is really the role that the board needs to play, a much more assertive role in creating what is the vision that we're looking for in terms of public investment. It's hard, I think, for the public to keep investing without seeing what are the outcomes, what are the goals, what are the priorities that we're talking about here right now. And I think that, you know, I'm looking, we have a brand new president. He's been in the job eight and a half or nine months now. And I'm looking and saying he needs the time to start to work through this. I think the agenda of items is out there. And what those priorities are in terms of how they're moving forward now to really deal with that, I think we're starting to see that. And what it comes back to is what's going to happen here in this building in terms of selling the program. What is it that we're going to be doing here going forth that is going to make the public want to invest more and to create the political atmosphere for the public to demand more investment if indeed they are sold on the fact that the investment needs to be made. I think there's lots of measurables, and I think, you know, that's part of the job that both of your committees have, is to help sort that out and get the communication to a broader, more sophisticated level than what it is now.
I have Representative Mazarol. I told you I had a long list, and you forgot you even asked to ask a question.
Yeah, I'll have to rethink here. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is sort of along the theme of the last two questions, but it seems there are two potentially competing or at least distinct priorities that could be fulfilled, and particularly with limited resources, they do become somewhat competing, and that is the goal of the university and its reputation as a research university versus its responsibility as an institution of higher education to educate. And my question is, to what extent does that prioritization impact the student experience, the quality of the degree, the quality of the education, and sort of the reverse of that, as a regent, how does that impact play into setting the prioritization?
And we will begin with Mr. Vogel, but I will ask the nominees if we could keep the answer short. We have some folks who have other commitments that they want to get going to, so I've had several requests if we could compact the time it takes for each question. We'll begin with Mr. Vogel.
As far as, I think I understand the question, basically, it's looking at setting the priorities between research and students, and again, that's that balancing act that I think I've had a lot of experience, especially over the last 3 or 4 years, with working with small businesses and just kind of soul-searching, what are we going to be and how are we going to do this, and can we do everything the same as we've done it before? That answer has generally been no. But those that are surviving and prospering are generally the ones that have gone back and retooled and said, this is what we can really do well. And, you know, when it comes right down to it, that probably will be one of the more difficult questions that I think will have to be answered is, relative to that broader vision and mission and goals, what can we do well and what can we do right so that experience for the people that are having it is all that it can be, and see where we go with that. Because and the other part of that to me is leadership. We really don't know what this is going to look like in 2 or 4 or 6 years. If you would have asked somebody 5 or 7 years ago, what is the university going to look like, it looks a whole lot different now than it did then, even though they always face the budget challenges. So I think that's where the leadership comes in with looking at the broad-based goals and setting your priorities properly, and then having the review and the accountability to make sure that they're being implemented.
Mr. Devine.
In answering your question, if I can cut back to the piece that you really had about the student experience, I think if we look at the modeling that is going on right now, and I think partly what's come from the from this end of University Avenue, the 4-year graduation experience has been sharpened, I think, and the pace of that is going to pick up significantly. And in looking at that, I think the new provost of the Twin Cities campus, Provost Hanson, and the Vice President of Student Affairs, Jerry Reinhardt, I think they're very much focused in rebuilding culture on the campus to enhance the student experience to a much more sophisticated degree than what it has. When we had the commuter model, it went away, and now we're looking to rebuild that. And if we look at private schools, they're probably ahead of us in terms of what's gone on in terms of enhancing that overall student experience. I think that much more needs to be done to develop it to a much more sophisticated level. Activities, organizations, internships, mentorship opportunities, all of those things enhance the student experience and prepare people for going into their life's work. And I think that there's clearly a wide open opportunity to do much more than what we've got right now at the University of Minnesota. And I think that President Kaler is on tune with that, and I'm sure he's now going to work very closely with those that can bring that about.
And Mr. Smith.
Just very briefly, having had 3 children just go through the college experience, I can tell you none of them chose one college and made an application and put all their eggs in one basket. So they were evaluating, along with their parents, the value that we perceived with that diploma versus the cost for that diploma. And I'm going to go back to the word I've used numerous times, and that's the balance. And I think that is a major piece of a Regent's duty, is to try to strike that fine balance where potential clients still see the value in that diploma is matched with the cost of tuition. And certainly that's going to be a primary goal. As soon as we start to see enrollment applications start to drop off, obvious red flags, and we've got to readdress that situation. But to me, it's all about balance.
Last question of the evening, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've heard some discussion about the 3 legs of the stool, the education, research, and outreach for the university, but we haven't talked much about the outreach yet. And as an old 4-H'er, I don't ever want to forget that part, because that was the part that most Minnesotans had exposure to early on, and I know Mr. Smith talked about his experience with that. But I'm wondering, what is your understanding and maybe goals of how the university can take their research and bring it to our state as a benefit? What would be the best method to do it? Is it the current method that we use through extension, or might there be some other way to do that?
Begin with Mr. Devine.
very quickly, you know, I think, you know, the consolidation that we've done from the county county extension to the regional centers model that they've, that the university has been putting forth, I think has gone well. And if I look at the information flow, the sophistication of being able to communicate that information through these regional centers and the resources that they're using to establish those as a much better tool to the general public, I think is going to go a long ways. That investment, I think, has worked out well, and it's also been a cost saver in terms of how they've actually delivered it. And I think actually, as I understand, the information flow is actually better than it was before. So I think that in looking at that outreach, that information flow is important, and I think they're using technology and they're using the resources that they have to enhance that in terms of how they take that out to the general public. I think they're moving in the right direction. I can't really assess right now personally what the impact overall, but I'm looking at the global of what they're trying to do, and I think it fits in with the mission of what they're trying to accomplish right now.
Mr. Smith.
I would concur that the public outreach is certainly the part that most Minnesotans do experience, whether it's through 4-H or going to their county fairs just as a visitor to the fair, not perhaps a participant, or to the state fair. So I think it's certainly a valuable part. I do think it ties into economic development. I think back to the days of the extension agents coming out to our hobby farm and talking to us about this grape variety, this raspberry variety. So I think there's certainly a key economic development part of it. I would agree with Mr. Devine. You know, we've had the regionalization in an effort to become more efficient in that delivery. I think technology is going to continue to be able to allow us to continue to get that right out to the user's home, and via Skype, via websites, whatever. That's going to be an increasingly great part of that communications tool. We frankly don't have the resources to go back to the county agents, which would be wonderful if we did. But I think technology has to take the place of that seat in every county.
Mr. Vogel.
Well, I had the opportunity to be the liaison to the County Extension Committee when I was commissioner, and went through the educator, I guess you'd call it reform, retooling. And what I found there is that we started searching for things that were relevant to the community. Scott County is kind of a transitional community, has ag yet, quite a bit, has hobby farms, has urban areas. And one of the beauties of this part may be partnering with the public. You know, we're not going to be able to partner with the public when it comes to a lot of research or teaching, possibly. But there's a great resource out there, and that's what we found, that there was a great resource of volunteers ranging from kids in school that were doing youth teaching youth to adults, and of course 4-H has always been dependent on volunteers. So, you know, this could be a real opportunity to start building on that partnership, and as you look at a lack of funding, the people time that's available to us is a tremendous asset, and this is an easy one possibly to start looking at things like that.
Thank you. Representative Nornes, I believe you.
That was the end of the questions. I just wanted to say one thing before we start to vote, that we appreciate all three of you being here. It's you can't imagine how tough we have when the next, I mean, this is a tough job to sit here and decide which among you will be the regent. So I just want you to, first of all, know we appreciate you being here, and know that this is a tough job for us. Thank you.
And with that, I believe we will move to the election. Unless someone has other comments that they'd like to make. We will have the clerk call the roll, and then just easiest way is just state the last name of the person you wish to vote for. I was first.
Chair Nornes.
Vogel.
Representative Atkins. Representative Banyan.
Smith.
Representative Benson.
Devine.
Representative Dowd.
Devine.
Representative Detmer?
Devine.
Representative Detke?
Devine.
Representative Hancock?
Vogel.
Representative Mazerall?
Devine.
Representative Marl?
Devine.
Representative Norton?
Devine.
Representative Pulowski?
Devine.
Representative Poppy?
Smith.
Representative Rukavina?
Devine.
Representative Vogel?
Vogel.
Chair Fischbach?
Vogel.
Senator Brown?
Vogel.
Senator Carlson?
Vogel.
Senator Eaton?
Devine.
Senator Gimsey?
Vogel.
Senator Koch? Senator Latz?
Devine.
Senator Lori?
Devine.
Senator Miller?
Vogel.
Senator Pappas?
Devine.
Senator Peterson?
Vogel.
Senator Roebling?
Vogel.
Senator Saxog?
Devine.
Senator Sharon?
Devine.
Given that our rules provide for the majority from both the House and the Senate, it's not just a simple majority, it's the majority of members. So given that there are members missing, we had no nominee reach the needed numbers in the Senate. It was 6-7. It was 6 Devine, 7 for Vogel. In the House, it was 9 Devine, 2 for Smith, and 3 for Vogel. So we did not reach a determination. If there, Chair Nornes and I had a short discussion, and maybe there are several options, we can revote, we can take the roll again and see if that, or there can be a recommendation of no recommendation. If there is any opinion on that, I guess we would take advice. And I've just been reminded that by the rule, given the rule has the lowest vote getter drop off, Smith would be dropped from the next ballot. So if there's any advice for the chairs, any opinions? Well. All right. Well, Senator, Chair Nornes and I have decided that we will just take the roll again if there's no motion for no recommendation, and it will be Devine and Vogel.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Can any comments be made in between?
Certainly, we'll allow that. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We actually are electing a representative from my 2nd Congressional District, and I know that the state statute currently says at least one member of the Board of Regents of the university shall be a resident of each congressional district. that's what current law says. And I know that currently all three candidates are eligible because they're all residents of the second. But I want to explain to you what is going to happen after January 1st. Laura Broad is currently also a resident of the second, but she lives in Le Sueur County. So she will be in the first congressional district. Mr. Devine is a resident of the second now, but after the 1st of January, he will be in the third congressional district, thereby leaving the second congressional district with no representative in their district for 4.5 years, potentially, of this term. And members, I just want you to think about that, because we know this right now. And even though we can elect anybody from the candidates today, I'm concerned about that. And yes, we can do it, but think about how you would feel if we were electing your congressional member and you knew that information now. I just think, you know, I'm looking for somebody who's going to continue to be in my second congressional district.
Madam Chair. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, and Senator Roebling and I had this discussion at the beginning of the meeting when we were waiting to convene. I just wanted to say two things. This actually is not that uncommon around redistricting, where someone lives in the district in which they're elected from, and then they're redistricted out. Mr. Devine, however, has lived in the second congressional district for 20-odd years, lives in Chanhassen, and he certainly is very familiar with the district, and I think he's only going to be, I don't know for sure, but maybe a few blocks out, a half a mile out, something like that. So it'd be very close to the second congressional district. I don't really know. I'm guessing on that. We elect students when they are students, and then, you know, they're elected for a five-year term and six-year term. They're no longer students often by the end of that term, certainly. We in the 4th District elected Regent David Metzen, and after redistricting, he no longer lived in the 4th District, but yet we thought he was a good regent, because when you are elected as a regent, you're actually told during orientation that you actually have to leave a lot of your parochial interests behind and think about the university and think about the whole state and what the university needs to serve the whole state. So certainly you have ties and you have connections and people can call you, and I called Regent Metzen because I knew him the best, just like I call Regent Beeson because he represents my district, but I also call the others and talk to the others because the issues are really beyond the 4th Congressional District. We didn't insist that Regent Metzen have to move or have to resign or anything, because we knew that he, having lived in the 4th District for many, many years, was familiar with St. Paul and Ramsey County and the issues around our district. So I think that really is less important. And then finally, members, you put Mr. Devine in a very difficult situation, because he could not, you know, if he lived in the third now, or he lived in the future second district, he wouldn't be eligible to run now in the current second district. So it's really kind of a catch-22 for him, and I just don't think that's fair. Redistricting happens to all of us. There's a lot of problems accompanied with it, but I don't think that should be in play in our decision today. Our decision today should really be who will be the best regent.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, clerk will take the roll.
Chair Nornes.
Vogel.
Representative Atkins. Representative Mannion.
Devine.
Representative Benson.
Devine.
Representative Dowd.
Devine.
Representative Detmer.
Devine.
Representative Depke.
Devine.
Representative Hancock.
Mogul.
Representative Mazerall.
Devine.
Representative Morrill.
Devine.
Representative Norton.
Devine.
Representative Pulowski.
Devine.
Representative Poppy.
Devine.
Representative Rukavina.
Devine.
Representative Vogel.
Vogel.
Chair Fischbach.
Vogel.
Senator Brown.
Vogel.
Senator Carlson.
Vogel.
Senator Eaton.
Devine.
Senator Gimsey.
Vogel.
Senator Koch. Senator Latz.
Devine.
Senator Lurie.
Devine.
Senator Miller.
Vogel.
Senator Pappas.
Devine.
Senator Peterson.
Vogel.
Senator Roebling.
Vogel.
Senator Saxog.
Devine.
Senator Sharon.
Devine. Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, obviously, you know, same thing happened. I would hope that we could just move on and that the chairs announce the what the total vote was to the entire legislature, and then people always, I mean, constitutionally, we have the right to vote for Mickey Mouse or whoever we want. So
is that who you're floor. Voting for, Representative?
No, I'm voting for Devine. I voted.
Then I'll wait. For
I have voted
vote
for
floor.
Mickey Mouse before.
I believe.
But I mean, I think we should just tell the whole legislature what happened in the committee, and then let us make the decisions as we go.
Well, and I believe that Representative Nornes had something he wanted to.
Members, as the vote tally shows, it's the second time it comes out the same as the first time. So it's my motion to make a motion that we pass on to the joint convention tomorrow. No recommendation.
And members, just before that, I guess everybody kept a tally, so they probably know the numbers, but just so that I make the official announcement. For the House, Devine 11, Vogel 3, and for the Senate, it was Devine 6 and Vogel 7. So we now have in front of us Representative Nornes's motion for no recommendation. We could probably do that on a voice vote, I'm assuming. So all in favor of passing on no recommendation, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
No. No.
The motion does prevail. Thank you very much, members, and thank you to the nominees. We really appreciate the time, and we will pass that on.
Can't be easy.
We are adjourned.